Agenda item number one, discussion and possible action on fiscal year 2013 comprehensive annual financial report by John Halls, Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Each January at this meeting, we bring our annual report to you all that after our auditors have completed their work on it, and that's what this item is. There is a resolution, there is an action item at the end of this, but what I was going to do is to take a couple of minutes to go through this, and some of this is for y'all that have been here before, will be familiar to you and repetitious a little bit, but I'll go through it very quickly. Next slide. The annual report, which we refer to as a CAFR, a Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, because that complies with what we follow is the GFOA, the Government Finance Officers Association format. We'll talk about that in a minute. Next slide. The purpose of the annual report, as you can see, is to present our financial results in accordance with GAAP, Generally Accepted Accounting Principles, and also consistent with GASB, Government Accounting Standards Board pronouncements, and also comply with the single audit provisions. We do have some state and federal audit requirements that we would have if we meet certain thresholds. Michael Bryan, who I'll introduce in a minute, will explain that actually we didn't hit those levels, so we didn't really have too much in the way of a single audit requirement this year. Next slide. The CAFR, the two main things, what each quarter we present to you all in the budget, and then the quarterly budget reports are really more of a cash, or what I call a modified cash basis, which is really where our monies are coming in and going out, which, of course, are what's really the most significant from a management standpoint. But the CAFR obviously then follows GAAP and full accrual accounting and things like that. It has a lot of non-cash items associated in it. And so there's a reconciliation. There's a difference between the financials of those two documents. The CAFR obviously is looking back, and the budget tends to look forward. But there is some differences, and I'll explain that in just a second. Next slide. In the CAFR itself, as I mentioned, to be consistent with GFOA, there's really three sections that are required: introductory, financial section, and supplemental. The introductory section is obviously just information about the authority that's hopefully informative and interesting. You'll notice this year we sort of try to pick a theme each year that changes. This year it was courthouses. You may have noticed that in your stuff, pictures of courthouses that are in the Brazos Basin. And historic courthouses, by the way, is the ones we picked. And there's information, so it's sort of a little mini history lesson there for those that are interested in that. Then the financial, the main part of it is the financial information, which is really what Mike's group audit is at Padgett Stratum. And then there's some statistical information at the end for information that's not really audited but is informative, hopefully, to the readers. Next slide. This is what I was talking about, and what I try to do each year is to reconcile the results of the CAFR, at least the income statement results, that we have, or the surplus or deficit. If you look at the third line there, sort of the surplus or deficit between our budget and our CAFR. You can see when the board adopted last year's budget, it was about $900,000 was the projected surplus. You can see we actually had a much greater surplus than that at the end of the year, $9.4 million. The reason, and we explained and talked about this back in October when I did the fourth quarter budget report, but really it was related to a couple of three things. Number one, a lot of interruptible water sales that we didn't budget for because they're not known at that time, so we don't budget for them. But we had a significant number. Half of it was in interruptible water sales, and the other half was on savings. Expense savings throughout the budget, sort of throughout the organization that we had, and that's what really created the larger surplus that we have. When you look at the CAFR that was in your material, the actual surplus there for the year, if you will, almost the net income, if some of y'all think of it that way, was about $4.4 million. So it was about $5 million less than the budget. And so somebody goes, well, what happened there? But this is what I explain in the reconciling items, sort of the difference between the budget and the CAFR. And again, it has to do with non-cash items primarily, and how you when you go to a gap-based from more of a budget-based approach. The first one, depreciation versus debt service. We don't recognize depreciation because obviously it's a non-cash item. We don't recognize it from a budgeting standpoint. We do from a gap standpoint, but we do recognize debt service. And the principal repayment of debt service is, of course, it's an expense from a budget standpoint because it's a cash outflow, but it's not an expense from a gap basis. It's obviously a recovery. It's a pay down of a liability. So anyway, that creates, there was a lot more depreciation than debt service. So you actually have a reduction of $6.3 million. Then as you go down the other one, recognition of deferred revenue. There is some revenue that had been deferred in prior years related to some contracts we have at Lake Limestone and other places, and that gets recognized. And again, that's a non-cash item, but it's recognized from a gap, so it would be an addition to the budget. I'm sort of showing these things as they would affect the budget to bring it down to the same level as the CAFR. Capitalized interest, sometimes there's capitalized interest in income, and there's a net effect of that. Again, you can capitalize some of those things, and that, again, is a non-cash item. Capitalized expenditures, we do have items that are capital expenditures in nature in our budget. We do that for rate making because we actually want to include them so we can capture and collect a higher rate associated with paying for those capital items that we believe are associated with our operations. But they're capitalized costs, so from a GAAP standpoint, they're no longer an expense, so you sort of have to add them back from a budget standpoint. Write down of assets. We do have time to time, and we have things on our books that are things we have capitalized in prior years, and due to various circumstances, we've written down those assets. In one case, there was a groundwater study that we wrote down an expense, but it had been capitalized before, and there's some other things that we have there that we write down. Again, these are things that have been expended before but are now being written off, if you will. And then capital contributions is the last item. That's where we get money back primarily on capital projects. We get monies from state and federal governments and maybe customers or people who help share in the cost. In this case, about $900,000 we received. Those are netted out of the capital expenditures from a budget, but they're actually a revenue source from a CAFR standpoint. They're a revenue, and so you have to add them back. So the bottom line is when you add all those reconciling items up, you can see that you sort of reconcile the difference between the budget and the CAFR. And so I know that's sort of an accounting lesson that some may not have wanted to have, but that's sort of how you reconcile those two types of reports. So that's one thing I try to talk about each year in doing that. Does anybody have any questions about any of those items or anything in that regard? Okay. The other thing I was highlight each year is just showing the last 3 years. And again, this was in the MD&A, the management discussion and analysis that's part of the CAFR, but showing sort of the last 3 years and sort of the trends. Operating revenues, you can see, just looking at 13, went down sort of significantly in 13. That's almost all attributed to SWATs, to the fact that we didn't have the SWATs operation that was transferred back to those to the customers there in 2012, and so we didn't have any of that revenue in 2013. The expenses went down some, but the reason is we had some other things go up from an operating expense. Depreciation and some other things went up, so they didn't go down quite as much as you might expect from SWATs. The expenses associated with SWATs really did go down commensurate with the revenues going down, but part of those expenses with SWATs are debt service, where they pay debt service. Well, debt service, again, is not really an operating expense in the operating expense category, so you don't see it there. You see some of it in the interest expense, where some of that went down, and then the rest is repayment of principal, so you don't really see it there, but that was paid off. So you can see the operating income, the change went down as a result of that. Interest expense, I just mentioned, has gone down. We've paid off some of our debt in prior years, so our overall interest costs have gone down. And then investment income has gone down a little bit because as we paid off some of our debt, some of our reserves went down, but also interest rates have continued to go down a little bit, and you'll hear a little bit more about that in a minute, but they've gone down a little bit. Non-operating items, you can see there's a big swing in non-operating items. You go back to 2011, the reason there was a $49 million non-operating item, that was really the gain on sale of the PK divestiture. That's where we sold the property of PK. There's a few other things in there too, but that property, you remember, was obviously sold for about $50 million, had a very low basis on it, and so we had a large gain on sale of that. And then in 2012, we had a $16 million loss, if you will, in 2012. That was really disposing of SWATs. That was getting rid of the SWATs facility we had. Once you write it off the books, and remove the asset from the books, and then there was a payment to them for that and all that, and that attributed primarily to the $16 million loss of SWATs. And this year, it's much more, you see, it's a much smaller number and stuff, and that's really more normal. I mean, 2013 was a little bit more of a normal year as opposed to those two transactions were unusual in the prior years. Anyway, you can see the net income and loss, and of course they were significantly different because of the non-operating items I just described. Anyway, working capital, the working capital much higher back before we paid off some of our debt, $91 million back in 2011. We paid a lot of our debt down and utilized those assets for that, and it brought us down to a working capital around $50 million. But you can see the total net assets have not changed that much. That's, if you will, sort of the net worth, the book net worth of the organization. Almost $250 million or so, roughly, is that. And that hasn't changed that much over the last 3 years. So anyway, that's just a summary of the highlights of the CAFR of the last 3 years. Next slide. That was the end. I'll introduce Mike O'Brien. And Mike has his presentation that he does each year to discuss the audit and the results of that. Mike has been, Padgett Stratemann has been our auditor for the last 5 years. This is the last audit under our current audit contract with them. We're going to go back out. We're going to go out for an RFP shortly thereafter and re-solicit auditors. Mike's group, I'm sure, will bid on that just like everybody else and may or may not get reselected. But we've really enjoyed the 5 years of work and have worked well, I think, with them in this last 5 years. So anyway, I'll let Mike talk about this last audit.
Good morning. I'm Mike O'Brien. I'll give you a brief audit report on the information John just discussed. On the next page, just to quickly overview, what we're engaged by the board to do is audit the financial statements of the River Authority. So that is the numbers, the disclosures, the content of the financial statements. We don't audit management's performance or the economy and efficiency of operations. We're looking at the financial statements to make sure that they comply with generally accepted accounting principles and have all the required disclosures, etc. So obviously management, in the case of the Brazos River Authority, prepares all the financial statements. We're auditing, so that's the kind of the best level of independence you can get from your auditor. Is we're not doing any of the accounting or record keeping. We're strictly in an audit mode. The results of the audit is we will issue after today an unqualified opinion, which says, in our opinion, the financial statements are fairly presented in conformity with generally accepted accounting principles. We're not engaged to give an opinion on internal controls, but should we become aware of any significant deficiencies, we have to report those to you in writing. We didn't report any in writing, so that means that we don't have any concerns over financial reporting and accounting controls. Generally, the River Authority has good systems and processes in place, and we rely on many of those during the course of the audit. On the next page, there can be as many as three audits in a year: the financial statement audit, the audit of federal awards, and the audit of state awards. Because, as John mentioned, the authority does receive certain federal funding and some state funding. The threshold to actually do a compliance audit is $500,000, federal and state. The expenditures in 2013 for each of those was less, so there wasn't an actual audit report required, so that saved you some money there. What we do have to do under government auditing standards, some testing over compliance with laws and regulations at the financial statement level, which we do that despite the level of funding, things like compliance with the Public Funds Investment Act and other sorts, debt covenants, things of that nature. We did not have any issues to report on any of that testing. On the next page, accounting policies and procedures, and here we start with some other things that auditors are required to communicate briefly to boards to make sure that you have an understanding of the financial statements themselves. In fiscal year 2013, there were some new accounting standards that were adopted. GASB statements 62 and 63, they didn't have a tremendous impact on the River Authority. 63 changed the names and some titles a little bit, but nothing too significant. There weren't any other changes in accounting practices. from the River Authority what they've been using in the past, and we view the accounting practices being followed as standard industry sorts of practices. Don't have any concerns over anything there. Going forward, though, a little different story. You're going to see the next 2 years some significant changes in accounting standards that have to be adopted. Next year, GASB Statement 65 has to be adopted by all governments. One of the main things there is you'll see all bond issue costs have to be expensed as incurred rather than recorded as an asset. From Brazos's standpoint, it's not too significant. I think you have less than $1 million in bond issue costs. But if you deal with other governments, you're going to see them implementing those standards as well. The big changes will be the 2015 when the new pension accounting standards are adopted by all governments, GASB Statement 67 and 68, and that's where, you know, governments are catching up with some of the private sector accounting. All the pension liabilities and assets are coming onto the balance sheet, and the actuarial standards that have been used in the past are changing some. So expect some big changes over the next couple of years in the accounting in those areas. Just like to point out that to everybody, to all my clients, let them know that the accounting world and the auditing standards the staff has to deal with is not static. They're going to be changing pretty significantly. On just some of the other things, real quickly, there are estimates in the financial statements. Depreciation, self-insurance liability for health claims, fair value of investments. Don't have any issues over how those estimates are made, just to let you know that as John did a good job earlier showing you, there are differences between cash accounting and the financial statements. We do review all those sorts of activities and don't have any concerns over the accounting processes or amounts there. The final required communications on the next page. We did receive full and complete cooperation during the course of the audit. Didn't have any disputes or disagreement with management over any accounting or auditing practices. As usual, the books of the River Authority are clean. There weren't any audit adjustments, which were errors that we found that we asked management to correct. And there's not any of those past or immaterial sorts of things carrying forward to the next year. And to the best of our knowledge, management didn't consult with any other accounting firms over any auditing or accounting matters that we may have been discussing. And finally, you know, John mentioned the comprehensive annual financial report on the next page. That is a lengthy document. We do not audit everything in there. There's lots of statistical information and description. We do, however, read everything, make sure that the numerical information agrees back with the financial statements and the records we've audited to make sure that nothing there is misleading. And that CAFR will be submitted here shortly, and expect the River Authority to receive the Certificate of Excellence again this year. And finally, my contact information, I do work for the board. Of course, I work closely with management, but I work for the board. If you ever had any questions or concerns, please contact me. There's my information and all the members of the audit team. That concludes a quick recap. Questions?
Right, thank you. I had a question, a general question about the statement 67-68 and how it's going to impact some of your other clients, the cities. And there are some cities, I understand, municipalities that this could be a pretty big deal and have a very negative impact because of the unfunded liabilities. What are you seeing that's going on? Are the actuaries going to make adjustments so it's not going to be as bad? There certainly are some, you know, significant unfunded liabilities out there.
There certainly are. The plan by plan, the numbers vary quite a bit. The actuaries are hard at work right now because the actuarial assumptions have changed in the new standards slightly. They have to change the actuarial method and some other calculations, so they're going through that. The big statewide pension plans, the municipal retirement system, county and district retirement system, employees retirement system, teachers retirement system. A lot of that flows down to participating entities, which Brazos is one of those, to the county and district retirement system. So they're really hard at work right now. Folks like me don't know exactly what they're doing, but we're going to have to rely and audit what they do. So we're hoping there's going to be a transparent process there. So, but you're right. What's happened here is over the last 10 years, you know, all the pension liabilities, which are unfunded, have been disclosed back in the statistical data. A few years ago, we brought some of that into the footnotes, and now all of the liabilities are coming onto the balance sheet, and so are the assets. And the assets are coming on for GAAP purposes at fair value. Actuarial assumptions, typically they're, you know, those are kind of straight lined over a period of 5 to 10 years, so it's not always fair value. So you can see, you're going to see likely changes in fluctuations in those values up and down because of the just changes in the market and the investments of the assets. So, you know, from the Brazos River Authority frozen retirement plan, you had an $8.3 million unfunded liability at the end of its last fiscal year. The TCDRS plan only had a $1.5 million, but it's in there at an 8% discount rate. And the trustees, I think, of the Brazos plan reduced the discount rate in 2013 down to 6.5%. So, you know, there's apples and oranges going on there with discount rates and how the assets have performed and how the values are smoothed out. So I couldn't give you the exact impact of what that is going to be to the River Authority, but it is a big issue, as you point out. If there's no other questions, I'll pass it back.
Is there no other questions? We have a resolution, a fairly brief resolution for y'all to. I'll read it.
Please.
Be it resolved that the Board of Directors hereby accepts the Brazos River Authority's comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year 2013 and approves its filing with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. The Chief Financial Officer is hereby designated to file the report and the annual filing of the affidavit with the Executive Director of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality.
Heard the reading of the resolution. Is there a motion to adopt? Sal?
There you go.
Second?
Second.
Peter? Please poll the board.
Presiding Officer Scott?
Yes.
Director Adams?
Yes.
Director Ball?
Yes.
Director Bell?
Yes.
Director Bennis? Director Bennis?
No. Yes, I couldn't hear you.
Sorry. Director Borland?
Yes.
Director Brashears?
Yes.
Director Christian?
Yes.
Director Kilgore?
Yes.
Director Johnson?
Yes.
Director Mackey?
Yes.
Director Masterson?
Yes.
Director Munson?
Yes.
Director Rankin?
Yes.
Director Tallis?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Zaccanino?
Yes.